Agra was admittedly getting bored of her day-to-day activities. Shopping for hay at the market, going for a nice gallop through town. These weren't the kind of hero lifestyle that she wanted. But after defeating so many colossi unscathed, she became so strong that not even a bridge could stop her. Agra sort of unwillingly promised the not-so-little Trico to be its master, teach the ways of being a beautiful Weta creature and podcast mascot. She wasn't sure how to go about it being just a horse and a hero as a hobby. Trico wasn't even a horse or an everyday animal, but a bird rat dog thing? She wasn't sure. Youngsters were into the weirdest things these days. You know, cyborgs, man-eating eagles, or what have you. In any case, she agreed to have a little spar with the Trico. Hopefully she wouldn't take it all out in one hoof, but for practice or something. It might be fun. And anyway, it might be more memorable than that weird purple ninja she accidentally clopped in the nuts the other day. The end.
Okay. Right on.
Yeah, cool. That intro was a nice One Punch Man parody, because I guess I missed that series, and I kept joking that Strider and Speed of Sound Sonic are the same. I don't know. It's been a busy week for me. Anyway, that's enough about me. Welcome to the January 2017 AgroCast, not the TricoCast yet, but... It's okay, Agro. We still love you. We're just thinking about Trico still in Last Guardian. So I'm your host, Chris, and I am accompanied by Matt. Yeah, how's it going for you, Matt? How's the new year treating you?
Yeah, it's going all right. I was like most people in Canada, I was sick as hell like a couple of weeks ago, and just flat out sick for a week. Couldn't do anything except, you know, watch AGDQ, which was all right. Caught a couple of runs. Don't ask me to remember them because I don't remember anything from that weekend. Yeah, so that was a bit of a vegetation week, but now we're back to business and doing pretty good. So weather's kind of nice now, not frozen, but frozen still happening day-to-day basis.
We'll get that frozen too someday, Matt. We can make every joke about it.
Right. As I was talking about on the previous podcast, 46 Okunin Monogatari, the Shinka Ran, which was localized as The Theory of Evolution recently. I played through that. It's the prequel to EVO, The Search for Eden, on the Super Nintendo. And I really enjoyed it. It is what it is. It's a very much an old-school RPG, so it's got all the trappings of that. It has all of the sort of the quality of life of RPGs from back then, but the writing, or at least the localization, is superb. I really enjoyed the adaptive system to the game. It's different than Search for Eden, where you have to adapt each individual limb, where in Theory of Evolution you adapt rather your statistics, and evolution kind of takes place over like a long cladistic chart, and increasing some attributes move you left on this chart, and increasing others move you right, and it changes your form based on which way you're moving on the chart. And once you reach a certain threshold for a statistic, like a milestone, it'll take you down a level and you get more robust forms. So it's a bit more limited than EVO in that sense. I guess in Search for Eden, you do end up going for certain evolutionary perks every time. It's like, okay, I want these jaws every time, or I want this body every time. Generally, the difference in forms in Theory of Evolution had to do with your abilities. So it was interesting to see where it took me when I had no idea of what animal or form was on the square next to me, and just seeing where adaptation took me. It was a really good game. It's a lot crazier than Search for Eden. Like, the plot is fucking out there. It's crazy, and I love it for that, and it was great. Anyone that likes Search for Eden or is a fan of, you know, old school RPGs on the PC-98 should check it out.
As someone who's still completely clueless about this series, even though you've talked about it a lot and I've seen you play the second game, were there any other games in this series, or did they make any games related to it? Is there any other media pertaining to this?
I'm not sure if there's any other media, but there's no other games as far
as it's only these two, really.
Yeah. Okay. And Theory of Evolution and Search for Eden, I guess they're kind of paralogs or retellings of one another. Like, it goes from 4.6 billion rather, BC to the Common Era, and the EVO does the same. So it's tough to talk about the plot without spoiling it, because it is kind of batshit insane, and I'd rather leave that up for people to discover. But there's like a lot of things in EVO on this NES that might not make a whole lot of sense when you're playing through it. There's certainly a few weird things that you come across that don't have any pertinence to the main plot, but are actually quite important to the theory of evolution. So it was interesting to see what's the deal with these creatures, and you find out in theory of evolution. So that's pretty damn cool. For anyone that was a fan of Search Reed, and I know it was an extremely scarce game, so fans of it are kind of limited, but they're passionate. I definitely check it out, because yeah, some stuff will start to make more sense.
So it's definitely a game, now that there's an option to play the first one and then go into the second one.
Yes, but you don't need to.
Okay.
They're completely different gameplay styles, and the plots are different enough with overlap that I think it'd probably be easier to play the Super Nintendo one, and then if you're a fan of it, go back and play the PC 98 game, because unless you are an enthusiast of like old school computing, it's not a game you might actually go through the trouble of finding a way to play it, because it does take a little bit of doing to get this working. So I'm not saying people not to play it. I'm saying you might want to play the SNES game first, because it'd be easier to find a way to play it. And I don't mean spending $300 on eBay for it. It's easier to find a way to play it and see if you enjoy sort of the concepts and then want to see where it came from. So also this month, I played through Doom 2016. I mentioned last summer whenever I was playing the other Doom games that I was looking to play it, but I couldn't, so I played those then, and I played this now. And it was a great game. I really enjoyed it. A lot of people said it's like Doom 1. It's nothing like Doom 1. It's sort of more of a hybrid of the old-school Doom and Doom 3, because it's not nearly as fast or frantic as Doom or Doom 2. It's not as slow or dark as Doom 3. But it's good. It's a good mix of the two. But if you're looking for Doom, Doom is not like Doom, if that makes sense. It is great. I do like most of the new monster designs, and you know the guns have a lot of punch, and it's challenging enough. I played on Ultra Violence, and I had a bit of difficulty at first, but then it became fairly simple by the end, but mostly because Doom Guy gets swole as fuck in it. Like, there's four ways to upgrade your characters in this game, and I would say if you're used to any kind of... Well, if you're used to Doom, play on Ultra Violence, because any less than that in getting all these upgrades, I don't know, it's just way too much power, because you can upgrade your suit, you can upgrade your guns, you can upgrade your statistics, and you can get runes to give you special abilities. And it's like, you know, I guess if I were to play on a lower difficulty, I wouldn't upgrade myself. But if I were to play on Nightmare, just the difficulty above what I played on, I probably would. But I think there's a certain balance issue created there. I know that all of this upgrade and progression shit is in there because that's what people want in this kind of game nowadays. It's still extremely refreshing. It's not a cover-based shooter where you take a bullet and then you have to sit behind a wall for fucking 30 seconds and magically regain your hit points. Sort of an issue I had with Uncharted.
I was wondering if that was a jab at Uncharted.
Well, I mean, that's the most relevant game I can point to that I've played in recent history. So I don't play modern shooters. Like, I think I talked about this the last time I talked about Doom. There's a period where I just got tired of playing this kind of game. But it's sort of a return to form, and it's intense, it's frantic, it's heavily skill-based for the most part. So yeah, it was a great game. I liked it a lot. I was kind of concerned about it. I knew I'd probably like it, but where this game got so much gushing and hype, it's like, you know, are these people just saying it's great because people are saying it's great? But yeah, it's pretty solid. It's pretty solid. It's not perfect by any measure, but it's pretty solid. As for anything else I've been playing, I started Dark Souls 3 a couple of days ago. I'm not really far enough in to talk about it with any kind of authority. I'll tell you, I really miss Bloodborne's gameplay. And I'm just adjusting back to Dark Souls now. I'm getting used to that again, but I was trying to do Bloodborne stuff. I started playing this, and I was getting my arse kicked because of it. It's like, you can't play this like Bloodborne. I guess you can, but not exactly like Bloodborne. Bloodborne was great, and I think that Bloodborne was probably, well, with the how good the weapons were and how good the gameplay was, I think in terms of gameplay, Bloodborne will probably outpace Dark Souls 3. But Dark Souls 3 and Dark Souls in general obviously has a lot more variety than what you can do in Bloodborne. So, you know, it's give or take. I'd rather trade like the 200 or whatever the hell weapons in Dark Souls 3 for the, you know, 40 weapons that are like Bloodborne weapons. But that's just me. I'm sure there'll be another game like Bloodborne at some point. That's enough about Bloodborne, though. Dark Souls 3 so far has been a joy, a real return to form. And anyone who's played through Dark Souls 1, 2, and Demon Souls will see a lot of familiar elements appearing. I mean, there's way more Demon Souls in this game than I thought there was going to be.
And I gotta get up to this.
Like, I don't want to spoil on anyone listening, but there's some stuff that, it really made me grin. And it's not just like little references. It's like, this is obviously just a reskin of something from Demon Souls. So I don't know how deep that goes, but there's also really strong connections to Dark Souls 1, and I've seen a few elements from Dark Souls 2 as well, so it's kind of interesting how they're doing that. And I think I've, a friend has told me before that it's supposed to be sort of a send-off to the series, so I'm not sure how referential or explicit it's going to get with that. But just the way that the storylines, without saying too much of Dark Souls 1 and 2, it makes sense for 3 to be the end.
That Dark Souls lore.
I'm glad that it didn't become a every year kind of thing. This is still the fifth Souls game I've played, so I'm surprised I'm not played out by it, because it is the fifth Souls game if you count Bloodborne, and I think you should.
You know, Matt, eventually you have to play Kingsfield and Shadow Tower after this.
I think one of those might be on the PSN, or at least the Japanese PSN, so maybe. We'll see. I'd like to play them. It's good so far. It's good so far. I can't really say much more than that because, I mean,
I haven't gotten very far in Dark Souls 1 anyway, so I worked my way up to 3.
One thing, it's not any kind of spoilers for Dark Souls. Every fucking one of them has a shaft that you have to drop down and hope you don't get killed by dropping onto narrow beams and hope you don't slip off. I think Demon Souls had that in the quarry area as well. So that's here. I found areas like that in Dark Souls 3. So, hey, it's got all the Dark Souls tropes. It's got
great
dark fucking shafts to fall down with jank-ass platforming. But other than that, it's pretty good. Anime cartoons. I started watching Space Battleship Yamato. I'm not going to talk too deeply about that because I'm not finished of it yet. I watched the movie, the first movie. I thought that, however I was reading the timeline, I thought that the first movie was the start of the series. And that was a mistake because it's kind of shitty. The first movie,
the second one is supposedly really shitty, but
yeah. But the first one, it's one of those movies that tries to condense a series down into a movie, sort of like Macross, Do You Remember Love? Tries to condense the Super Dimension Fortress Macross into a movie. But where Do You Remember Love adds new elements and streamlines things and kind of makes it its own and is effective as a self-contained movie, Space Battleship Yamato isn't. Because there's not a shitload of character development in the series itself. There's some, but only for certain characters. And the movie takes it away completely. And It's the series is good. There's some interesting and cool episodes that deal with things that sort of the space opera anime don't normally deal with. And it's got some good lore, and it's got, some interesting situations that they get into, and it's cool how they get out. You know that they're going to get out because it's the titular ship, and it doesn't get blown up because it's the hero of the day. But, you still want to see how they do it. I think I still prefer the Super Dimension Fortress Macross. I think it's a better show with better characterization, but I could see where Macross aped the fuck out of Space Battleship Yamato, like down to even character design and how the Zentradi are basically the Gamilusians or whatever that they're called, however you pronounce that.
God, I
It's
don't even remember. Yeah.
apparent and obvious that Macross was influenced by Space Battleship or straight up aped it. But anyhow, good show, good show. I'll talk more about it next time. I'll have finished the first series and probably start into the second. I've been told now to avoid the second movie, so I will do. And I'll probably just watch this series.
Are you watching the original series that was released as Star Blazers here or whatever? Are you watching the newer anime?
Yeah, the original 70s is what I'm watching.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll watch that new jack shit. Come on.
And there's also that live action, or is it really good awkward CG Blu-ray movie out that was on Amazon that I was thinking of looking in, but yeah. I've also only seen a bit of the Leiji Matsumoto's works. I tried to start with Yamato, but I apparently had a lot of trouble finding the series, so I was like, okay, I'll just get ahead. And then I started watching Captain Harlock, which I know you'll get around to, so we can talk about that.
Yeah.
And then there was Queen Esmeraldas, which was the first series I watched because it sounded really cool, and then I ended up going back to Harlock. And then there's other series that he made, like Galaxy Express 999, and there's probably a few more in that universe, but I'm not an expert in it. I've only just done a couple of research based on the two series that I've seen so far.
Yeah, I do intend to follow up on some other space opera anime as well. Harlock's probably the next bet, but I think there's three series of Yamato. I don't really plan to watch the new one. I might watch it down the road, but not now. I kind of wanted to watch very old school anime, if that makes sense. I wanted that aesthetic
Oh,
more.
yeah.
Other than that, and being able to commission for a bit, that's what I've been doing in terms of media consumption. How about yourself? How was your January?
Oh, but January has been really busy, so I haven't been doing much lately. I also watched a bit of Awesome Games Done Quick, but when I say I haven't watched much, I've only watched 2.1 runs. Because I watched Hyper Light Drifter, because we all know that I love that game after I talked about it so much on that podcast. But that was a good run. I watched La Mulana, which made me realize I should really pick up this game, and it was gifted to me, thanks. Even though I watched the speed run and I saw all the puzzles get solved, considering how the speed run just glitches things and does like all this ridiculous shit, and it's La Mulana, so nothing makes sense just by watching it. It's not gonna matter. I still have no idea what the heck's going on when I play it.
It's a very dense game, so if they're skipping things, you're still gonna need a notebook for that one.
Yeah, so now I have it both on the WiiWare, on the Nintendo Wii that I'm very lazy at hooking up, and now I have it on Steam, which I think is more accurate to the PC version, like the original release. Not saying the WiiWare version was, not really faithful, but it had its own changes. So I got two different experiences now of La Mulana whenever I get around to it.
The original release or the remake release?
Not sure. I should
If
check for my La Mulana.
it's the one
Yeah.
I played on Steam, it's whatever the remake or whatever it is.
I think so, yeah. I don't know, the WiiWare version is also based on the remake, or is the remake its own thing? I don't know anything about La Mulana, apparently. Other than that I wanted to back the Kickstarter for La Mulana 2, but no Mac release. So I was like, oh, okay, I guess I'll find my way to play it someday, along with the
Probably,
first game.
I haven't really been keeping up with the emails for a whole lot, but they'll probably have more releases for it at some point, because I could see them doing it at some point, but who knows, it's a small group, so.
And then I started watching the Fire Emblem Blazing Sword speedrun, but Lin's chapters are so slow, even if it is a speedrun, and they were just talking about Fire Emblem basic stuff because it's a tutorial, and I'm just like, I don't have the patience for this, so I haven't gotten around to it. And I did want to watch the Undertale speedrun, but yeah, I also have not gotten around to that.
Yeah, there was a couple of good runs. To be honest with you, the Mighty No. 9 run was actually good.
I'm kind of curious about that, actually. Maybe I should watch it.
Well, the runner was entertaining and self-deprecating and funny, and he had some cool antics and all that. He was a stand-up guy, so yeah, that makes a difference when you're watching anything like that.
I'm just kind of curious, like, about the speedrun. Like, the game is kind of a mess in ways, so how much could the speedrun do to make it ridiculous?
You've got a PS4 now. You could play it in glorious HD, so.
I have it on Steam. I think the Steam code is still sitting in my email, so.
Yeah. Well, anyways, let's get away from Mighty No. 9.
Yeah. As for games, the only game I've really been focusing on is Necrodancer, because Amplified DLC came out, and I'm saying, okay, I can buy it, but I can't play it until I do all Zones of the Candidates, which is still giving me a lot of trouble for some reason. Zone 3 is really annoying, and I don't know, the Dead Ringer fight just doesn't go well for me, even though I know the strategy. I just can't pull it off all the time.
I saw that there was DLC coming out for it. I didn't actually investigate it yet, but I might have to check that out myself.
And speaking of roguelikes, I finally cleared Sheeran on the DS. All 30 floors, I did it. It got a little pressuring on the last 3 floors, and there is a final boss, but if you have a staff that, like, freezes it, you pretty much wrecked it, so that wasn't as intimidating as I thought it would be. There are bonus dungeons, but I haven't unlocked most of them, and you need to go through the game again to encounter the random NPCs at the checkpoint towns, and I just don't feel like doing that again right now, so I'm gonna take a little break. I was looking into getting Izuna, but Izuna's apparently really difficult to find a copy of, so maybe it's best that I just take a Nintendo DS roguelike break.
Well, Izuna was Atlas, wasn't it? So, there you go.
Right, I never got a reprint, unlike Etrian Odyssey.
I was a bit excited there. I thought you were going to tell me you beat Crawl.
I wish I beat Crawl, and that would be a great podcast. I would talk for like 20 minutes about my strategy and how long it took me. But no, Crawl's still an attempt.
But Sheeran's a pretty good accomplishment. You were talking to that for like 2 podcasts.
Like forever, now. Yeah.
Yeah. You finally had to use your equipment, and I got you through the dungeon, I guess.
Yeah, it was like my sort of good equipment, but my really best equipment is still sitting somewhere in a warehouse, so maybe when I get to, like, the dungeon with 99 floors, maybe I'll need to get that out, but yeah, right now I think I'm good. Thanks, Golden Condor. And because, you know, it's me and I have to talk about Fire Emblem, the Fire Emblem Direct happened, like, 1 or 2 weeks ago. One is talking about the Switch game, which we'll talk about after this. It's a Dynasty Warriors game, so if you're into that, that's cool, I guess. I'm just concerned about representation.
Right.
I mean, on one hand, Nintendo's been really focused on the newer games, but at the same time, I feel like I shouldn't worry, because Hyrule Warriors pulled out freaking Link's Awakening characters, and they said, yeah, this is fine. So maybe they'll be representative of the whole series, and hopefully not too much focus on the newer ones. And maybe they won't have Block Girl or something.
Yeah, it would be nice if they didn't make up too many OCs for that game. Because there's so many characters that they have to represent, and people are going to be upset regardless because their character didn't get into it. If they start putting OCs in, it might get a bit salty, so it behooved them to stay away from that, I think.
I'm sure all the player insert characters count as OCs already, but that's a sort of jab at Fire Emblem there. They are also releasing a mobile game, which is probably going to get way better representation of characters. It looks like a gacha game because all mobile games that are based on really hit video game series end up being gachas.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I'll end up playing it. I just hope microtransactions aren't too crazy.
Is that the one with the vote, or is that the other one?
Yeah, that's the one with the vote that's going on, where people have been voting for a lot of new characters. Which
Well,
I
I
should be
mean,
surprised about, yeah. I had
it's what.
to actually vote on characters that I like, and then all the characters I like, well, not all of them, but most of them are like, few of them are maybe not so popular, so I shouldn't expect them. Whatever. It's fun. I don't really care about this vote. And the last big Fire Emblem news was that they're making a remake to the second Fire Emblem game, Fire Emblem Gaiden, which I ranted about podcast ago, and it ended up being my least favorite Fire Emblem game that I had played. But, in terms of the remake, considering it is my least favorite Fire Emblem game, and they're giving it, a fresh new UI and stuff for more modern standards, I'm sure it'll be fine. I'll probably still have the same complaints if they still make it a mess in some way, and I normally don't do well with Fire Emblem games that focus on world maps instead of chapter as most games are, but I'll probably pick it up, maybe. I'll just look at the reviews and then see if it's worth getting.
Especially if it has Shadow Dragon art style, remake art style.
Actually, the art stuff of this game is pretty good. That's a big plus, actually. They finally got rid of the artist for Fates and Awakening. Not that they were a bad artist, it's just that I was getting a little tired of them. I'm probably gonna import it because that seems to be my thing now, importing Fire Emblem games.
Right. Well, you know the plot of that one, anyways, you played through it.
Yeah, I mean, they might expand on it now that it's no longer a simple Famicom game and now a brand new 3DS game. And maybe they'll add supports, which sounds kind of scary thinking about adding supports in, but maybe it'll be alright.
Were they in Shadow Dragon?
No, I don't think so. I think they added
I
some
don't think so.
dialogue to Shadow Dragon, but it wasn't supports. And then they sort of added supports in FE12, but I haven't played that one yet, and this is only me from the limited knowledge I know that they were, just fluff. They weren't really as interesting as supports in normal games.
I don't know. I'd say there's a good chance that that stuff will show up, even just because they're gameplay mechanics. So,
And
yeah,
supports are good
maybe.
too. I mean, they flesh out characters, so hopefully it's written well is my concern. And since I brought it up, yeah, Nintendo announced their new Switch handheld slash console thing.
Right.
To be quite honest, I'm not sold on it. I wouldn't buy it at launch, but it looks like okay. They're getting a Mega Ten game, so hopefully that's cool.
No, there's absolutely no reason to buy it at launch unless you wanted to play Breath of the Wild. But if you have a Wii U, I don't see the point in getting a Switch for it. I know people say, where did the grass go in these trailers? Maybe the Switch version has grass and the Wii U version doesn't. No, that's entirely possible in
If
terms
there's
of
anything that
how.
we've learned from the Twilight Princess dilemma, the version it was originally made for is going to be the better version.
Right.
But we'll see.
Well, I mean. Breath of the Wild has obviously been delayed months, so it could be a launch title for the Switch. So we'll see how it turns out. And at this point, the Wii U has been completely forgotten by Nintendo. So if it runs on the Wii U, that'll be a miracle, I think. But enough about Breath of the Wild, about the Switch. Yeah, I wouldn't get it at launch. I will say it looks like a fun console. However, Nintendo, number one, has to prove themselves to me. And number two, well, they do
Yeah, it's real.
because, and to a lot of people, and I don't mean that just in terms of the game quality, because even if I don't agree with, their decisions in game design, the games are usually quality games. At least they work and they do what they're intended to. The problem with the Wii U is that for the last 3 years, have you seen any fucking support for it? Like, they'll have Nintendo Directs, they'll have events, and it's all 3DS games. It's no focus on the Wii U.
I don't
I think
even know
that'll
what comes out on the Wii right now. As far as I'm
exactly.
concerned, like,
Well,
the only
exactly.
game that came out for the Wii was Bayonetta 2.
Yeah, the same. And I had said at one point, I'll get a Wii U, a couple of years into the lifespan because I want to play Bayonetta 2, and then there'll probably be a couple of fun other games worth, like Mario 3D World or whatever, 3D Land, 3D World, I think, on the Wii U. Looks good. And I thought that there would be a few more solid games, but the support just, it vanished. I'm not convinced that the Switch is going to take over the handheld side of things either. I think the handheld aspect of it will just be secondary. I cannot see Nintendo letting go of the DS line right now, where that's their money maker. I can't see them abandoning this. Even Fire Emblem Warriors that you were just talking about, it's coming out for 3DS and Switch. Like, I don't see that changing very soon, and I don't see a new 3DS, whatever the hell they'll call us. I don't see that not happening in the future. Like, there might be a brief period where the Switch is the only Nintendo console, but I don't see that happening. And you can prove me wrong, Nintendo. I don't care if you do. It'd be nice if you gave one console the care and attention that you gave one half of your consoles. But I did have 2 points, right? So that was number one, is that they have to show that they're going to support it, and that, like, support for it's going to be more than the first year and a half. The second thing is, I never buy consoles day one anyways. It's just bad, bad juju, because there's always problems. And Switch's lineup is not, it's not robust enough that I have to go out and get it. Like, 1-2 Switch would be fun for a half hour, and then it's like a $60 or probably $80 game in Canada that should be a pack-in like Wii Sports was. And like Skyrim's an 8-year-old game, or 7 or 6 years old, whatever the fuck it is now. Even though their launch window has more games than the Wii U had in its entire lifetime, and that's embellishment, obviously, but the Wii U didn't have many games. Right now, it's just not. It's just like, why get it now? Why not get it in the holidays when Mario Odyssey comes out? Why isn't Mario Odyssey launching with the Switch? It's weird.
Also, I did make fun of the Wii U earlier, but to be fair, it does have Xenoblade, which looks like a decent game. I haven't played the first one, so I can't even move on to the Wii U Xenoblade game. And also, it has Splatoon, which is not my thing, but you know what? I think it's a genuinely good game from what
Yeah.
I've observed and seen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, the Switch has Splatoon as well, except the Squid Kids have new haircuts. And I shit you not, according to some people, that's enough to get them to buy the Switch. So, Nintendo faithful,
I'm
Nintendo
more like Splatoon
only.
faithful.
Well, I guess so. And also, oh, Squid Kids and Mario Kart, but it's not even a new Mario Kart, it's Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. So, you know, I think it would have behooved them to make Mario Kart 9 with some new tracks and things, and it would behoove them to, I don't know, just have a better showing. ARMS looks all right, but again, you know, not impetus to buy a console. I know that's just me, but even the PS4, when I want it, The Last Guardian so much, I have a number of games right now because I waited until there was a library that interested me. And it's kind of a funny situation because Nintendo needs early adopters for this thing to succeed, but they don't have the output, I think, to get as many as they need. And if you look at some of the things that they're doing, it's a little bit sketchy, like the pack-in controller, the Joy-Con dock, whatever the hell it's called, the grip doesn't charge, but the one that you buy separately does. There's some weird little things in there
God, I
that,
didn't
you
even
know,
know that, but geez, okay.
if you're going to buy the Switch, like, be very careful about buying it. And if you just want it for Breath of the Wild and you have a Wii U, consider just getting the Breath of the Wild on the Wii U. Or if you can wait a little bit, because, you know, you can wait. You don't need to play it right away. I mean, there's games that I really want to play recently that I waited for because I didn't have the console. I didn't go out and buy the console right away. You know, just wait till Christmas and get Mario Odyssey, which looks like the most fun game on the platform right now, honestly. Zelda looks all right, but who knows how it's going to be.
Us and Zelda's are not exactly a good subject
Yeah,
sometimes.
that's our own ambivalence. Anyways, that's kind of my take on the Switch. I'm interested in it, but I'm cautious.
Yeah, as much as I'm interested in that Megaton game, which is supposedly labeled as an HD version on the Atlus website for the anniversary of the series, that's intriguing to me, but it has to be a good game to sell the system to me, or else I'll just play it on someone else's system.
Is this Megaton game exclusively for a Nintendo platform?
I don't think it was decided on, but I'm gonna say it probably will be. Yeah, it's a Nintendo
Okay.
exclusive.
The other RPG that looks good on the Switch is Octopath Traveler, which it's sort of a semi throwback to 16-bit RPGs. That looks interesting. But it's a semi throwback to 16-bit RPGs, like half the games on Steam. So, I need to know more about that. And again, it's just not something to buy a console for.
You want me to buy a Switch? Sin and Punishment 3. That's it. Just all immediately buy a Switch. Sin and Punishment 3. Series began as a three-part project in 1989 by Capcom. First, a manga, second, an arcade game, and third, a Nintendo title, taking more inspiration from the manga than the arcade game would. Interestingly, the Nintendo title was only released in North America, and a Famicom version was never released. While the arcade game gained a lot of prominence, getting a sequel and ports to home consoles, and even a reboot game in 2014, the NES title remains as a sort of black sheep to the series, as it focuses more on detective work and more platforming. So Strider is a game that I've probably talked about every now and then. I think that when the 2014 game was released, I talked extensively about it and got really excited. But what is our history with the Strider series and this NES game in particular? Matt, tell me about your life with Strider.
My history with Strider, not that exciting. You probably have a lot more history with this. I kind of wanted to play it, or at least the Genesis version when I was a kid, but I really didn't know anyone with it, so I never really played Strider on the Genesis until I started collecting for myself. When I did play it, I found it kind of janky and kind of more flash than substance. So when I played the NES game eventually, I thought, hey, this is more substance than flash, and I kind of like this. I was surprised, but at the same time not surprised to see that the NES game didn't have a whole lot of positive reception. But that was back when I had a bit more vitriol, and I got into arguments about Strider, and when I said that like Revenge of Shinobi sucked and things like that. That these Genesis games that had better versions elsewhere. Like Shinobi 3 is better than Revenge of Shinobi, and I always said that the NES Strider was better than the Genesis Strider, but Run Saber was better than both. But yeah, I mean, I've played some of the Striders since. I never really played through the arcade or Genesis one all the way. I have the Genesis Strider. I played through the remake Strider. I actually really liked that game. And it's not exactly like the Genesis game or exactly like the NES game. It does have some elements of the NES game, I think. But it was good. It was good. I thought it was more solid than either. So yeah, I mean that's my history with Strider. It's not that long.
Yeah, as for me with Strider, I was introduced to the character via Marvel vs. Capcom, and I was like, oh man, like this cool purple ninja. Of course, I didn't have a PlayStation or a Genesis at the time. The NES version was the only one I had access to. So I remember playing that a bit a long time ago, and I barely remember it. Later on, I was able to play the PS1 version when it got ported from the Genesis, and I've been fortunate enough to play it on an arcade machine, both 1 and 2. Fortunate and unfortunate because I'm very bad at Strider 1 and 2 arcade. That takes up a lot of quarters. So I'm really glad that I have it on my PlayStation 3 now, and I haven't actually gotten to play a lot of the 2014 remake. But I also like that one as well. I won't die as much because it's not built the same way as the arcade one necessarily, but. Yeah, Stardust's a really cool purple ninja to me. Yeah, but enough about the arcade game. We're going to cover the NES game, the Black Sheep, because, you know, Matt, the two of us have some weird taste sometimes, and maybe we're the only two people who actually like the NES game. But we'll get more into that later. Let's actually get to the bulk of the game. Start off at Kazakh. I don't have to pronounce any Russian names, but it's the beginning stage. The game controls are maybe a little jank, but at least you can sword slash really quickly, and you have that upward thrust. It's not really an upward thrust. But how do you feel about the controls here?
Like you said, they're a little bit jank. I don't know if it's like if you try to move then jump, you kind of stunt your jump a bit, or I found it better if I jumped then moved, like direct myself after I start to jump. But other than that, the jumping's all right. I think the problem with the jumping is it's a little bit momentum based. So if you're like going down a slope, you can jump a lot further. And once you understand a little bit of that, it's a bit easier to do. But it's sometimes it felt like my jump was like cut short for no reason.
I think even till the end of the game, I never understood how to do longer jumps unless it was on a slope. If it was the regular, I guess, one column width jump, that was fine, but then they start getting longer jumps, and I never learned how to do that and then fall into spikes.
Yeah, and Kazakh has one of the worst spike pits in the game, actually, because if you fall, you have to go back all the way, and you can bounce across all the spikes if you're not careful, so it's punishing in that regard. As for combat controls, I didn't find much problem with them. Your slashing works well, and the up slash or up jump or up poke, whatever you want to call it.
Up poke, I guess, yeah.
Honestly, I find that you get hurt doing this, so I didn't use it as much in situations as I probably should have, because I'd rather jump up and slash the enemy than do this.
Yeah, it doesn't also work very well if you're trying to get an enemy above you. It was really weird with the hitbox on that one. So I only used that move in very limited situations. It was best to do the jump and then slash move, as you said. So Kazakh pretty much gives you the basic know-how. Like, I mean, you have to jump across spikes, you learn how to do that. You got enemies that are really basic and just run towards you most of the time. And really slow at shooting, I guess. There's some exploration involved. You can look for keys. I don't even remember if you get keys in this one stage at this point. But they pop up every now and then. And then sometimes files will appear at certain points. You'll notice there are 6 files if you ever looked at the analyze screen at home base. And you only get one of them so far, or at least 2 of them?
You get 2 in the first stage.
Yeah.
Because you go find one and you get one. Like you capture or encounter a military guy at the end of it.
Right.
And you get one around that point.
You also level up when you encounter this military guy and you get the slide skill, which thankfully makes, you know, getting to places a lot faster. And also you can do the cool thing where you slide through like boss doors like Mega Man. So that was pretty neat.
The like the mechs that you fight there, I don't know if they're that strong here, but there was one later in the game that one hit me, but they're not too bad here, I don't think.
I think it just might be the hitbox though, that makes it feel a bit lengthy, but I think the ones here when you first encounter them is pretty simple.
Yeah. But they drop from the ceiling and that can be a problem.
Yeah, you have to know where a lot of enemies come in because you only have like 20 HP at this point.
Right. And leveling up by finding people and such gives you more hit points and energy for special attacks.
And as you're learning this game to get back to base, it's not as simple as saying exit on the subscreen. You gotta go all the way back to the beginning, and then you can warp back to base.
Too bad you don't get warp until later, but by the time you get it, you kind of don't need it. But yeah, you gotta trek all the way back, because you get to this weird flashing room, and we have to keep that in mind for later, but you have to walk all the way back to the beginning.
You can explore more of this stage, but keys are numbered, so there's going to be like a door called S3 or whatever, and you can't get past there yet until you have the 3 key.
Yeah. Well, luckily, you'll be coming back to Kazakh like 15 times, so.
Yeah. So like I mentioned, there is sort of a detective work to this game, because you get these files from exploration, and you can analyze them at home base. Usually they just say stuff like, oh, I left my boots back in China or whatever. or I left my boots in Egypt. And there's different places you can warp to around the world. I think you're only limited to Egypt and Australia at this point, but Australia is locked behind an S5 door, if I recall correctly. So Egypt is your next destination.
Yeah, I found it kind of weird that he said that he left his boots in China, but I couldn't go there yet. So I was like, come on. But you can't get to China yet. But I'm wondering if you have to trigger the boots appearing by actually analyzing this disc. I don't know if that's the case or not. But
yeah, I'm not sure about that. I've always just analyzed the files because I have zero recollection of what they even say. So it's been a very long time since I've played any Astroider.
The other file does tell you that you have to go to Egypt. You're looking for like a friend named Kane. And I think you're following up on that by going to Egypt. But the disc says that it's the Phantom Train. So we're gonna have to do some suplexing.
Or we can have Strider make some spear retracts.
Exactly, yeah.
Actually, this is a very basic train. I mean, you don't really need to like jump across trains that are disconnecting or anything as you would expect in any train showing up in a video game when you have to travel on the rooftops, but no, it's just a very short section. I just wanted to mention it because Strider makes spear tracks.
I gotta say, I really kind of liked that the train was there, just because it kind of broke things up. They should have done a little bit more of that going forward. Like, you maybe go on top of a Flying Fortress later or something.
Or that like would have been fly on top of a plane or something ridiculous.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I think it's a bit of a missed opportunity because you have to go back to some of these stages a couple of times. And the fact that Egypt starts with this, and I don't think you have to do this if you go back to Egypt again. I forget.
I don't recall. I don't think so.
I don't know if you ever have to actually go back to Egypt. You might. I forget. But I kind of wish that some more stages did this and broke things up a bit.
It's a pyramid because who expected that in a stage about Egypt? But it's a little more complicated platforming than Kazakh, and it's larger. But all you really get here is the fire spell, and you need to learn how to do the triangle jump at one point. And the triangle jump being essentially the wall jump, you know, you learn in Metroid. But because Strider has some jank controls sometimes, it's a little difficult. Oh, and you get the aqua boots here. That's another reason why you came here.
Exactly, but the aqua boots are kind of only used for very few things. The triangle jump, as you mentioned, luckily you don't normally have to do. You only normally have to do like two or three of them in a row. Like, you don't have many long sections of that. I like that there is wall jumping in an NES game, but it's a bit jank. It's a bit jank. At the very least, there's no like really emergency sections to do it in, so it's a bit, it took a bit of pity on you, I think, because it's a little bit jank.
It's a cool technique that Strider has, but you barely need to use it, which is fortunate. Yeah.
There's a lot more momentum jumps in this stage as well. The run down a slope and jump over like four or five spikes at a time and things like that.
Yeah. After clearing Egypt and getting the aqua boots, where you discover that you can walk on water now, ooh, there's so few sections you can do this in, but you can do it now. There's not many places to go to, so I guess it's back to Kazakh. I think you get a key in Egypt, but I don't recall this, because, I mean, you just kind of get them and then move on.
Exactly. We got key 2 in Egypt, and that's where we're taking the Kazakh.
On our return to Kazakh, I mean, there's more or less the same as from what we did the first time we were here, just moments ago. I think we encounter Kane here, and we get, you know, a little story about Kane and whatever's going on in the Strider base, and but it's, you know, the Strider story is just really weird, even though it's incredibly basic. Some project is going on.
We fight a pretty badass boss in Kazakh here as well. Oh, it's a motorcycle guy that calls you out and then tries to drive.
Oh yeah, the motorcycle guy that you kind of just jump over and then slash at it three times, and you're like, all right, that was okay and different.
Okay and different is a new cool name.
Yeah.
I like that he calls you. I like his style, but a lot of the bosses in this game are pretty bog standard.
I don't even know it was a boss. I thought it was like a mini boss, if anything. And you also learn the medical spell here, which is going to be useful later.
Yeah, it will be. And you get file 3.
And you get file 3. So the next destination, because, I mean, there's not much story going on at the moment other than investigating what this project is about. Next up is Japan, which I felt would be a bigger stage because Strider being a ninja and Japan made sense to me, but it's only like 4 rooms and pretty cool dude with a sword who goes down rather quickly.
Yeah, it's like a dojo from hell or something, but the samurai that attacks you, it can use a plasma arrow on you, but it doesn't do it very frequently.
You get your own plasma arrow here, which is just charging with the upward poke for a while, but I found that really situational.
Well, it's so slow, is the thing, right?
That too.
It would be a great ability if it didn't take as long to charge as it does. Because you can hold it and then you can jump and shoot it in the air as well.
Yeah.
So it's actually a good ability if it were faster.
And then you also get the Sparks kill, which I don't use ever because it's so slow. It's better if you just slash. And then you also get the jump spell. Yeah. Because we gotta have a jump spell. Actually, I found this useful later on, but otherwise, it's still jumping is just jank.
Strider can jump on your roofs and everything like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You make another key or file here. I apparently didn't note this, but I mean, this is basically what you do in each stage. Is you either get a level up or a little story, or you get a file to analyze or a key that unlocks more of the doors.
Yeah, and this file gives you a little bit of background on Zane, because we came to Japan to get some information on Zane, and now we're going to get a little exposition on us that it's a mind control weapon.
When you get back to base, you're randomly attacked by someone who is mind controlled, and then Strider is familiar with this. It's basic.
Yeah, it's Kane attacking you. I thought we actually killed Kane at this point because he's like, you know, my sister was the same when she lost her mind.
I know, right? And then
He's like, you know, I'll destroy you, Zane. And this is the way he said it. And like, Sheena, please take care of Kane. He says, I'm thinking, you know, is she gonna take care of him in the hereafter? I was like, is Kane dead? Is Sheena dead? It really kind of threw me off.
Yeah, it's a shame that there's no, like, Japanese version, because I'd be like, oh, maybe there's a more accurate translation to this. But then I remembered, oh, there's only this weird North American version. So this is all the information we'll get about, I guess, whatever happened here.
It needs Ninja Gaiden kind of cutscenes is what it needs.
I mean, I did say it was based off the manga, but it's been a very long time since I've read that, so I have no idea if this is further elaborated. Maybe it is, but even the NES version, I think, takes its own course anyway.
Spoilers, Sheena and Kane are not dead at this point. But
surprise!
It sure gave me the impression that they were, and then later when we talked to them, I'm like...
But I think now we have keys and more information, so now we can go to China, which is kind of like Egypt, and it felt like a giant pyramid.
There's a couple of these rooms. Is this the place with the head, the like the spikes and stuff?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's fairly straightforward, and you get the magnet boots. Wonder what you do with those.
Yeah, there's a scientist tells you, did you go to my room? The key for should be a Kazakh, that's what he says. Like, gotta find this dude's bedroom. But, you know, you've got these magnet boots, and there's only one place you could think you could go in Kazakh, so we have to go back to Kazakh.
Yep. You know, yeah. This is the third time, man. I think I'm getting a little bored of the stage.
It's that, like, flashing wall you have to go to, and then you can use the magnet boots to sort of climb up the side of it.
And even when you get the magnet boots, the section after there isn't much longer. It's like getting there is longer than it takes to get to this new section anyway. So maybe it would have been more interesting if you get warped to a different location on your return for Kazakh, and then you get this whole expansive version to get to wherever the magnet boots are. But I asked for so much.
I think the level should be larger, more labyrinthine in general. And yeah, I think a lot longer area with more sort of puzzle platforming with the magnet boots might have been cool and interesting. In this case, I think that's the biggest drawback of Strider on the NES, and I'll talk about it more at the end, is that these levels really need to be bigger with more branching paths and more variety. It's like the magnet boots are used 2 or 3 times in the game at maximum. So I think there's a little bit of missed opportunity there.
So here we have another key, so it's time to look for those S4 doors somewhere. And last time you probably saw that was in China, so here we are back in China. But at least the China stage is larger, so I find this not too bad as return to Kazakh again.
Yeah.
I mean, it's more or less the same as your first visit. There's that mini-boss with a sword and a shield, but it's really just jump because it mimics you, and then you slide behind him and kill him.
It might take you a second or two to get the timing down, but it's not that rough of a boss at all.
Yeah. You also get the slide attack boots here, but once you get those, there is a nice corridor you need to jump up, and man, those Ed Koons and Super Metroid would really laugh at me here because it took me so long to get out of here.
Yeah, I think the place you're referring to is probably the most difficult triangle jumping in the game.
I think it's only left, right, left, but that is hard in Strider, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
It's not like a long pit like it was in Super Metroid, but just because the triangle jump is so difficult to pull off, going from one wall to the other for me, I just... let's not talk about how long I took here.
Did you use the slide move as an attack a lot in this game?
Yes, because sliding is fun. Also, I just kind of ran into things without thinking a lot about it.
Yeah, I guess if you're using slide to move through the stages, there's a benefit to have this because now you're doing damage. I didn't use it to attack a whole lot because I found that I was getting myself hurt doing this. But, it was useful if you're charging through things anyways.
You mean like my return to Kazakh for the bazillion time? Although, first of all, while we're in China, there is a new boss here, which is the first Zane machine, which looks like a weird tree thing. Whatever. Some square comes down from the ceiling, and you can use the jump skill, to stab it a few times. And then you have to stab the center of the tree. It's really...
Yeah.
Weird, but it gets the job done.
Now, I don't know. Did you use the up stab on this?
No, I got hit too much, so I just did the jump.
Yeah,
slash
exactly. I jumped and slashed at his cheeks rather than try to get it in the chin. At this point, your health isn't like super swell, so you might just need to use medical once or twice, but it's not that bad of a choice.
Yeah. And you also get key 3, but as we were mentioning, we have to go back to the S3 doors that were in Kazakh, so here's that slide attack skill, so I can get through this section again really quickly.
Yeah. Actually, we should mention that before going to Kazakh now, we go back to the base, and Sheena comes out saying that Kane has run off.
Because they're not dead.
Yeah, because they're not dead. I was like, how did Kane run off? I was actually really confused at this point. Because I didn't know that this was Sheena until she started talking. I forget what tipped me off that this was Sheena, but also that Kane's alive. I was like, pardon? you know, anyways, Strider.
A little more elaboration would have helped.
No, I guess it's fine, but it's just the way that that previous scene played out. It's like they're dead. But yeah, I guess we don't really have any clues as to where Kane is, but we know we have to go to Kazakh because we always have to go to Kazakh.
Yeah, this is our fourth trip here, which is more or less the same as the last 3 trips. Except at the end of the S3 door, the path will lead you to another Zane machine, which is practically the same fight as the one before it. Maybe it has a little more health. I wouldn't know. And you also learn the ground skill, which I used once and realized it was garbage and then never used it again.
Yeah, I used it once to see what it did, and I was like, yeah. You know, exactly. I don't need to shake the screen because... You fight one enemy at a time in the game at some point. Yeah.
And you get another data file.
The Strider Matic unit. I guess the guy's name is actually Matic. I thought Starter Matic was sort of like in naming the unit like after a vacuum cleaner or something, but you're talking about the Zane in Africa though, so it's sort of tells you where to go next, that
Yeah.
file.
So now here's our trip to Africa, which is, I give credit for being a very different looking stage, and it's probably
Oh,
because
best stage.
we're done
Like
looking at Kazakh 4 times already.
yeah, it's great. You have to use your aqua boots. Do you have yeah, you have 3 boots now. By the way, how does hell does Strider wear 3 boots at once?
Maybe they just all, I don't know. At least you don't need to go to the sub-screen and, like, switch them
That
every time the need arises.
would be great. The best game of all time does that, so Strider.
Imagine there was a water stage. Oh, I have to put on my aqua boots, Strider.
I actually really like this level, so getting back to Strider. It's so much different looking than every other stage just because it's so lush and organic, and it's got that muddy water, and it's got that cave and things like that. It's cool, and it's interesting, and it's nice.
I like it for that, but the platforming here was really jank. I guess this is also the only time I've ever really used the plasma shot, is because those guys are hanging off the ceiling and they have really low detection, so I just charged and jumped and shot them down before they could get me first.
Those poor bastards with their t legs tied to the
Yeah,
trees.
whatever's going on there.
Yeah.
We came here to Africa to defeat another Zane machine, which is once again the same fight, really.
Yeah.
But we get Medical 25, which is also a really good skill that I'll use later. And you get Data File number 6, the last one.
And this one, again, is Fassius Clay, but this is actually Fassius Clay. The sort of, you kind of think this guy's the big bad at the time. And I have an appointment with Matic in Los Angeles. Take care of things while I'm when I'm gone. So, a little bit of exposition there. But then, Strider runs into the Bionic Commando looking room, shouting for Sheena. And where did she go? So, oh
What's going on?
no. Yeah, did Sheena go to Los Angeles to get her big break? We'll have to find out.
Also, I wrote in the castle the country of Los Angeles just because I think it's really funny that we have, the country of Egypt and then the country of China, and then we have a whole continent of Africa and then Los Angeles.
Yeah, I did find it funny that we go to Egypt and Africa. It's like, yeah.
Just, I guess Kazakh would be a city. I don't know if that's actually a real Russian city because I and bad at geography, apparently. But yeah, the country of Los Angeles, which is a level I don't even remember because I think it was fairly straightforward.
That's really quick because, well, things happen in very short succession. You fight a motorcycle, you go down a tube. You find Sheena, who this time I think is actually dying.
Maybe.
Because she has a lot of dot, dot, dots and get revenge for me and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah, I guess
So,
that's true.
which usually in NES games either means you're Golgo 13 or you're dead. So, so I think she's kaput. I think she's kaput. You get to a man sitting behind a glass dome, though.
Yeah, which can't be broken by human power or something to that effect.
Yeah, you should have sided with me as Matic did. So this is Fascius Clay, and I don't know if you just wail on it with anything, but the plasma arrows I think I used.
Oh, okay. I kind of just wailed on it and it broke. I think I actually went through a few spells and went like, "What is?" And then I was like, "Never, I'll just slash at it."
I did the same, but I think the final hit I delivered to it was with the plasma arrow. So maybe I'm thinking that. Yeah, but yeah, it breaks. But you are a monster after that.
I didn't know Strider was so strong.
And you get the upgraded Spark ability, Spark Ball,
Yeah,
and
which was very useful, and I never used it except for the one time to see what it was.
Exactly. The other one's SP Balls, like a cool shield. I can hit these guys that fly above me that I always hit myself trying to kill.
Yeah.
Nope. It's another spark move, as far as I remember.
And you get key number 5. Where is the S5 door? I think it's time to go back to Australia. Actually, I don't think we've even been to Australia before.
Yeah, I was there and I couldn't do anything, so.
Yeah, I think I did go in there and realize there was the ES5 door and then left promptly. But unlike Africa, Australia is also pretty boring, even though I thought it'd be a really cool, more environmental level.
Yeah. Yeah, you could talk to a couple of the bad guys as well. One guy says that you're stupid and it doesn't do any good to destroy any of these Zane machines as long as the main one exists.
Well, it's you know. Story, so yeah. It's something.
So you fight another Zane machine.
Which is exactly the same as the fight previous to this and the one before that one.
And is this the fourth fight?
50? I don't know. They're all the same at this point.
I think it might be the fourth one by now, yeah. Like you said, I know I've said that the game needs more variety, but it does need a little more variety. It's not right if they did these Zane machines, but like have some kind of a way to deactivate a barrier around them and then fight them so each fight is different. Anyhow, I'm not going to give Capcom tips on a 30-year-old game, but you know, they could have used a little more variety.
Then we also get the Medical 50 spell, which is another spell I also ended up using eventually. Then we head back to base. I think Kane is dying for real now because of the use of ellipses here.
Yeah, exactly, ellipses. And he tells you that he's at the Red Dragon, which isn't a restaurant.
Do you even remember where on the map this was located? Because I don't.
I don't think it's on the map. I think you just go there. I think the Red Dragon's got to be a red version of Space Station.
Maybe it is.
Because you're going at the Strider Maddox level.
So being the final location, it's a lot lengthier than the previous stages, but it's still fairly straightforward.
I had to use jump a couple times in this
place. Because there's like a spot where the spikes are pretty spread out, and you need to jump here. Or maybe you don't, but I'm just bad at jumping, so.
It simplified things, and it's a cheap enough ability that, it was hard to do.
Yeah, you don't get energy refills as often as health, which are also not exactly common, but it's not too bad.
Lots of mini-bosses in this stage as well.
You get to fight our favorite motorcycle guy again.
Yeah, and shield guy. And another ninja. I don't think it's like a light blue ninja. It's not a purple ninja. So unfortunately, you can't punch him in the nuts or or so on. But it's actually, ninja fight actually, it's not that bad, but it kind of threw me off a little bit at first.
You know, I'm still not entirely sure how to defeat this ninja guy without getting heavily damaged, because it seems simple, but I still have no idea where the right place to hit him was.
I found it best, actually, to use the, to hold your cipher upwards and jump ability, because for some reason I wasn't taking damage or only 10 damage or something when I did that. So it wasn't like 100% safe, but it seemed safer than trying to jump up and hit him in the air.
Yeah, which I tried and lost a lot of health, thanks Medical 50.
Once you hit him, he turns into like a whirlwind or something, and that's easy to avoid, but it takes like 5 or 6 repetitions to beat him. So it does drag it out a bit, but it's definitely the hardest mini-boss compared to the rest of them.
Mostly because I just still have no idea how to damage this guy correctly.
Yeah.
You had a better idea, maybe, but otherwise, just trying to damage him was more damaging to me, but at least a tornado attack was easy to dodge. And I believe following this, you get a clue that there are 2 systems you need to turn off to access the main chamber.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some kind of orb-looking thing that you can slash at, and it doesn't really attack or anything, you just slash at it and it destroys itself.
It does a shitload of damage if you touch it.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I tested that out because I was like, okay, this is somehow extremely easy. And I want to test it out to see if there's any danger to it. And yeah, there is. But yeah, so you got to do a couple of rooms between each of these, but you just slash and destroys. Or you're like me and you try to go past that scientist thinking that the other chorus past him, and then you got to go back past him, and you have to listen to his spiel like 3 times.
Yeah.
Even after you get both chords, he still says the same thing. It's like, come on, dude. The sort of like Tony Hawk half pipe area that you go between to get these chords, I had to use jump actually to get over that as well. Either side of that. I don't know how you get up it normally, but I just wasn't doing it, so I had to jump.
That's okay. I had a lot of trouble in the beginning of the stage, and at this point, after I got so damaged after the tornado guy, I don't want to use medical anymore.
Yeah.
But once you destroy those two orb things, you can continue on. That guy will yell at you again because you need to encounter him on your way out. But then there is another magnet wall again, which is really not threatening, even though there are things shooting stuff at you.
Yeah. I fell off it once or twice because I instinctively wanted to jump it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's that scientist that tells you that it wasn't Yggdrasil, which I thought it was trying to spell before, but it's not.
It's like Yggdesimel or something, but it's definitely trying to be Yggdrasil, because what else would it be?
And it's just trying to be a fancy name, I guess. Continuing on, well, there's finally Matic, who says he'll dance on your grave. So that's some style right there, I guess.
This is like the game's sole point of challenge, this guy.
Yeah. I think you also have a rematch with the shield guy and the tornado guy, but at this point, whatever.
How did you fight Matic?
Slashing and then dying a lot to figure out what the heck to do.
Yeah, I ended up eventually using the plasma arrow on him after dying a couple times because that knocks his cipher away. And I found almost every time I went after him, he was knocking my cipher. And the skills I was trying on him weren't really doing anything that I could tell. So I ended up using plasma arrow, which he closed the distance a couple of times. It wasn't easy by any stretch, but it seemed to do the trick for me.
You know, I think that's what you're actually supposed to do, because that's the only way I managed to get his cipher out of his hand. So maybe you're supposed to use the plasma arrow on Matic and then slash him and then get your cipher back.
Yeah,
it's
maybe.
A little frustrating, yeah.
Like, I was just getting ripped to shreds every time I tried to get him, and then he'd kill me when I was running for my cipher, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially when you have low health, because Tornado Guy is not exactly a good boss fight.
But I actually kind of like Strider Matic for that, because a lot of the other bosses, with maybe the exception of the Tornado Ninja, this weren't that threatening, so they have a boss with teeth.
Yeah. It was neat, just, you know, you're hitting each other's cipher out of your hands and you need to go retrieve it, so that was pretty cool as a dramatic fight. But after defeating Matic, you're not over yet, because the next room has the final tree, Yggdesimel, which is probably the same as all the other Zeta Machine fights, except maybe it shoots at you more often.
Yeah, it sort of shoots more like Thunderbird does than the previous Zane's Thunderbird, of course, from Zelda 2. It's still not too bad, though. It's actually fairly easy to avoid its shots. So, yeah, it's the same as every other Zane tree, to be honest.
It probably has more health than any of the other Zane trees, but you also have way more health at this point, so it doesn't matter. But you defeat Yggdesimel, and I guess Kane and Sheen are dead for real. Striders. He's gonna be a ninja more. He puts his cipher down and walks away. Touching ending.
Yep. Yeah, it's not bad. It's not a bad ending.
It's a dramatic ending. So, I like it.
We'll be right back.
So, although NES Strider is more exploration-focused and a completely different nature than the arcade game in terms of difficulty, is it fair to consider the NES Strider as a main Strider game, or should it be looked more as a kind of spin-off in the scope of the series?
I gotta be honest, I don't know enough about the scope of the Strider series, Strider 1 and 2, to actually say if it should be part of that continuity or not. Or if it should be considered, if you mean it should it be considered a Strider game. I think it should be, because it does have a lot of the same... It does have a lot of the same, like, properties of the Strider series. It's just not all that flash in there. It is a different take on things. Exploration focus, as you said, but I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. The new Strider is heavily exploration-based as well. I think the new Strider's a pretty damn good combination of exploration and flash. I think that regardless of if you consider it a Strider game or not, it's sort of overlooked. And sort of overlooked because it has a Strider name. And it probably would be regarded a bit more highly now if it wasn't called Strider. It being different than other Strider games shouldn't necessarily preclude you from playing it.
Before I looked into the Strider series for making this podcast, I always knew that the NES Strider version was taking some more cues from the manga. I had no idea if the manga even tied into the arcade version, but finding out that they were part of this three-property system for the Strider series, I think I see it more as a fundamental part of the series now, and before that I thought it was more like a looser property, if that makes sense, just because it seemed a little more distanced, despite the fact that there are reoccurring elements like, you know, fighting the weird Russian technology. I think it still works as a main game, and I think if the NES Strider game was more fleshed out and maybe more robust, I think it would be a well contender. But even though it is an NES game, they kept it too short and too simplistic, so it just kind of doesn't seem the same robustness of the arcade games, and even the 2014 version, even though I haven't played much of it, but the first stage alone was very lengthy and had the huge boss battles and everything that also come in from the arcade version.
Right. Yeah, I agree about the robust point, because, like, as I said, I wish the levels were longer with more variety, more labyrinthine, like, make the keys more meaningful, make the stages, like, have a lot more scenery, a lot more components to them. The enemy variety needed to be stepped up a lot, and I think the game could have been really, really solid in that respect. It's not a bad game, but I think it missed a couple of tricks. Flash isn't impossible on the NES. Street Fighter 2010 is a very stylish game. I know a lot of people don't like Street Fighter 2010. It's because they don't understand how to play it. But it's not impossible on the NES. It is difficult to pull off, and it's probably the better option that they played it a bit more safe with how Strider controlled. And I know some of the jumps are a bit jank, but they did play it safe compared to the arcade or Genesis Mega Drive versions of the game. The whole analyzing discs and such aspect was really neat, but I think that the game needed to make you look for these discs a bit harder, and maybe it would have benefited more from having more Metroid-style stages. Maybe not an interconnected world, but like a more Metroid kind of level design to, like, each individual level. It's like we said, you go to Kazakh 4 or 5 times in the game, and it just gets aggravating and boring every time. And even though you get new abilities, they don't really make it so you get through the stage much faster. A little bit faster, but not much faster. So I think going to these same environments, but finding, like, much more large areas and involved areas when you make your return trips, that would have been really beneficial to the game. And I think there's, like, upgrades that barely did anything, like the magnet boots, where you use, like, twice each in the game. There's a lot of missed opportunities in this game, I think.
Yeah, it would be a lot better if you get all these three different boots and they barely do anything except for now you can progress through this one tiny section of the game. Maybe they were more incorporated somehow to exploration instead of the tiny section. I don't know, maybe there should have been a terrible water section that you had to go through with the aqua boots. That might have just made things a bit different, and that's probably why Africa is... We actually like that environment a lot because it's so different, not seeing Kazakh so many times.
Just exactly,
larger areas would have made the whole detective work more interesting, too, just because you walk into Australia and you see the S5 door, like, when you enter... Maybe if you could explore some of Australia a bit, and then you find the S5 door, that would be interesting. But the stages are really short. Even Red Dragon being the final stage is fairly short and straightforward.
Well, even, like you said, you were excited to go to Japan, but it was very...
Four screens, very really?
Like, it's okay to see sort of this classical Japanese area, but you could have went to, like, Shibuya or something and seen, like, more of the outside, or make it a little more Blade Runner, kind of, right? You know what I mean? There's a lot you could do with the environments that they chose, like the country of Japan or the country of Africa or the country of Los Angeles. Like, all these countries that you know never really see more than a little bit, because even a robust level like Africa... And I guess it's so robust because you want to get across an entire continent. you know.
It's a large continent, okay?
It is very large, but I don't know how much they could fit in the game or with their team or what have you. It just seems like they needed to have bigger environments. It would have helped the game immensely.
So we did joke that we're singled out because we actually like this game. Do we still like NES Strider from the last time we played it?
Yeah, I do. And I think I like it a little less than I did. And I was never, like, a gushing fan of the game, but I call the Mega Drive version the choppy version, but this game is jank as well. I don't think the Genesis game is as cracked up as it is said to be. It's good, but it's not as good as people say it is. But I also don't think NES Strider is as bad as people make it up to be. It's good, but it's not that bad. I think it's extremely overlooked. And, you know, it's like a 2-3 hour game. It's worth to sit down some evening, play it through. It's a fun game, but it really only has enough content to hold your attention for the one night. So, in that regards, it's all right that the content is what it is, but, you know, there's definitely better and more fluid NES games. Yeah, I'd say it's very, very middling. I think it's sort of an average game, I guess, in the end. But that doesn't mean I don't like it. I do like it. It's just, it could have done a lot better.
I feel the same way. I barely remember me playing this the first time. I must have been really young because I thought this game was pretty difficult when I first played it, but I found out that the game is actually pretty easy up until the end, mostly because the tornado guy really took some damage out of me. So I thought I had that going for it, but I guess it's only the arcade version that gives me a lot of difficulty, and the NES version was kind of me just breezing through this game in 2 to 3 hours, like you said.
Yeah.
Because there wasn't really much to explore, so I went through it fairly quickly from what I expected. I guess I was hoping, since now that I'm older and maybe have a bit better hand-eye coordination, that maybe we'd have that Metroid experience like you brought up. But no, the stages are pretty short, and there is a lot of missing potential.
Yeah.
And I don't remember the manga, but maybe if they maybe incorporate a little more story to go with more robust levels, that would have made it a lot better. But I don't dislike the game. It was fine, even though it had jank platforming and the one triangle jump in China that I was really bad at. But yeah, I don't dislike it, and I don't think it's a terrible game. I think it's alright, you know, it's not bad. I wouldn't mind having it in my personal NES library. Probably just because we've discussed about it, and it's like, NES Strider, yeah, I have that game.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a decent game just to play in like an hour or two. I think it's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. I'd rather play Run Saber or Hagane, but Strider NES is fine.
I think the fact that it was only an NES release is why I haven't seen it in any other Capcom collection except for the GBA. Because usually when they do those whole Capcom collections on PS2 or whatever, I mean, this one is always left out. I don't even think they have Strider 1 and 2 arcade versions on them.
Is that a GBA release?
Yeah, it was on a Capcom's Classic GBA collection or something like that. I didn't really
Right.
look into it. I just saw it on the Wikipedia page when I was looking into Strider information for this game. So it's kind of, I guess, a forgotten title in a way. But, you know, it's still all right. I don't dislike it,
Yeah.
so I can still say I like it. So I guess we can still be singled out.
We're still sinners.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. If you'd like to contact me, I'm crossu@twitter.com, CAWRASU. Matt, where can we reach you?
You can reach me at twitter.com/mattazoic, MATTOZOYC. It's like the Mesozoic era, except the dinosaurs are better. Website's the same, mattazoic.com.
And where can you contact our deer horse and possibly man-eating eagle too?
Twitter.com/TRICOCAST. No, it's AGROCAST, Aerocast.
All right, Matt, what are we covering next month?
Next month, we will tackle the eternal debate that has raged on for, 25 to 30 years now of Outrun versus Rad Racer. Well, I don't know how many folks out there, but I've had it numerous times. I think folks that know me will know which one I prefer. But we're going to throw down next month. We'll talk about driving games, but more or less talk about a brief discussion of it. We're on a brief discussion of Rad Racer, then a comparison, and then we'll compare them to Epona and Arrow as well.
Of
So
course.
that's what we'll do. That's what we'll do next month.
Right, cheers.
Cheers.